My name is Nicole Lim. I'm the International Director at Freely in Hope. I'm a third generation American working in Kenya and Zambia. This is The Cultural Christ.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, J.W. Buck. In this podcast, we explore the intersection between the Christian faith and cultural identity. We hold interviews with followers of Jesus to discuss the way our faith impacts our culture and how our cultural identity impacts faith. Now to this week's episode. Welcome, Nicole. Thanks so much for being on The Cultural Christ.
Thanks for having me.
So we're friends. I remember sitting in, it was probably Berkeley. It was you, me, and a few other people. I don't remember who all was there. Some Freely in Hope event in PAX, and we were talking about your cultural background, and it was such a fun conversation. But for those who don't know you, please introduce yourself a little bit and just dive into your cultural background.
Yeah. So my name is Nicole. I am a third generation Chinese American, born and raised in the Bay Area. And both of my parents were born and raised in California. My mom in the city of a gentrifying Chinatown post-racial segregation. My father in the deep suburbs of a village outside of Sacramento, surrounded by predominantly white and new Chinese immigrants. Both of my grandparents also came from Toi San, which is a village in the southern parts of China. And growing up in the Bay Area, I had a deep awareness of my Chinese American identity. Grew up in a Chinese American church, was with my Chinese American family. And I was also homeschooled. So I was just submersed in Chinese American culture, mostly in community and proximity with this Chinese American church that my mother had actually initiated from my grandfather's church, which was predominantly first generation immigrants. So being immersed in a very Chinese American culture, I began to definitely feel a sense of home in what was familiar with the food and the dialect and the Chinglish, if you will, Chinese and English kind of merging together, with also this deep understanding and intensity of the need for education and, in a way, assimilation and proximity to whiteness. That was never obviously explicitly said, but it was definitely the intention of this knowledge of how our family had immigrated from poverty, war, famine, and disease, and are now in this place of the land flowing of milk and honey to pursue greatness and success and prosperity and financial wealth. And so that understanding was deeply embedded even in our Christian culture, of this necessity to stand together and to be together in close proximity because of the ways that the war has torn our families apart, and this cultural need to do well in this world. And so being in an Asian American church really, yeah, fostered a sense of close-knit identity of what is considered success, both economically and also spiritually.
Thanks for sharing. When you say Chinese American, and you hit on a few of the things, but talk to me a little bit about what you mean by Chinese and what you mean by American. And did you grow up having an awareness that these things were emerging, or as you got older, you kind of look back and reflected and see that hybrid nature of those things? What do you mean by those?
Yeah, I think growing up, I was very well aware of my Chinese American-ness. And so it is hyphenated, where in being Chinese by ethnic identity, culturally, very much American. My father does not speak the language at all. In fact, his accent is terrible. My mom can speak the language, but her accent is also terrible. And then with us, me and my sister, we were forced to go to Chinese school so that we can kind of have some semblance of our culture and language and like keeping that close. However, because we didn't speak it with anyone, you know, I was getting straight A's in Chinese school, but still unable to have a conversation. And so it was definitely like the necessity of culture was definitely important. And it was also, we were also very much aware of its importance because we were both put into Chinese school. We were always in family settings, engaging in culture, engaging in our foods, and then also in church. We were also engaging in Asian American spirituality, how that was coming to be. I think growing up, I was very aware of this cultural identity of being a hyphenated, you know, American, in that I knew I wasn't Chinese enough because I couldn't speak the language, and I wasn't American enough because I didn't assimilate into whiteness. And so that constant awareness caused us to create our own thing, to create our own culture.
I'm glad you bring up the topic of whiteness. And for those who are listening, majority culture perspective, settler perspective, Anglo-American perspective can be talked about as whiteness. Growing up, was that a topic of conversation in terms of resisting dominant culture, or was it just a default to resist it by virtue of the community and the church that you were a part of? What's been your journey in relation to the American side of things and how unhealthy the dominant culture is constantly trying to force people to assimilate? Talk a little bit about that.
Resistance is a strong word that I don't think my Chinese American community intentionally would engage in. I do wonder if, you know, just by creating our own safe haven and spiritual community, if that was a sense of resistance or really a sense of comfort, honestly. I would actually label it more so as we were comfortable with each other because that's the place where we can be in our hyphenated identities and create what was necessary for us, which in the spiritual sense, in the cultural spiritual church sense, was speaking English, being with each other who looked like each other, eating the foods that we all grew up with and all love, and having, I would say, a more like quiet sense of how we worshiped and how we engaged with each other. We were definitely more culturally kind of like quiet and obedient. And I think that's typical of at least the Chinese American culture that I was raised in. It was not discussed, this notion of whiteness. I think by nature of survival, the generation before me was forced to assimilate in, especially in post-segregated America. There were desires and dreams and pressure that were put on the second generation to assimilate so that they can reach that sense of wealth and financial success to make it in this world that their parents had risked their lives to come to. Because my parents were forced to assimilate in this world of whiteness, fortunately for me, it wasn't an expectation, but it was more so a, this is how it is. And with now this third generation being here, and now that we have a little bit more leverage in terms of economic, social, class setting, you know, class awareness. The question actually was to me, like, what do you want to do? Which wasn't typical for my parents, I know.
Wow.
So I was really blessed with parents who actually asked me, what do I want to do with my life? And fortunately, I did actually have a resisting, in a way, my mom resisted some cultural norms in terms of choosing to go into the arts instead of medicine. My father went in the pathway of medicine, though. But my mom chose to go into the arts. And so I think because of her resistance, she allowed me to, in that way, resist. And I would say that resistance is more so to the Chinese expectation as opposed to the American expectation, which was freedom, right? I think we came to America believing that there was a sense of freedom. So for my mom, I think in assimilating, she took that like part of American culture to say, like, actually, I'm going to pursue the arts and not medicine. And then for me, they gave me that choice. I feel that with second generation being forced to assimilate, the first generation being forced to flee poverty, forced to also find a way of living and being in a violent world, in a racist world, the third generation is still, at least I was lucky for me, I had a relationship with my grandparents where I could still firsthand see the impacts of trauma and poverty and war and communism. And in observing the poverty and disparity that my grandparents came from, while also living in the socioeconomic wealth that my parents had created, me as a third generation is kind of holding that tension of, what do I want to do? What do I want to be in this world? And with the freedom that I was given in terms of being able to choose, I felt like I was at that tension of knowing how to reconcile my role as a third generation Chinese American, not being far from the poverty of China, but also the lynchings of Chinese in America, not being so far from that, but still living in wealth in contrast to what my grandparents had experienced, right? Yeah. So I feel that the third generation of Chinese Americans, many of us are kind of wrestling with, what do we do with our privilege now, actually, that our parents had been forced into assimilation for, so that we can gain a sense of privilege in our being Asian and in our being able to assimilate into whiteness more readily, and also in being culturally non-resistors. We don't, there were very few of us at the forefront of the civil rights movement. We were there, but there were very few of us. And so what does that say about who we are as a people and how we engage in social justice and discourse? So I think the third generation, we have an opportunity actually to engage in these issues, knowing that our lineage was not far from it, and that we now have a responsibility of how we can wield our wealth and our assets and our education and our resources to better empower the disempowered and to better leverage our cultural awareness for the sake of uplifting other folks who are newer immigrants, predominantly Southeast Asians, and for marginalized Black and Brown communities.
Thanks for articulating the differences between first, second, third generation Chinese American experience from your background. It's wonderful to listen and hear about. How do we map faith and Christianity onto this? Was it kind of seamlessly woven in your upbringing through all of these dynamics you're talking about? Tell us a little bit about your church experience and how God fits into what you're talking about.
Yeah. So for me, I'm actually a fourth generation Christian. My great grandmother was introduced to the faith in China by missionaries. So that faith component has been a really critical part for our family to have hope that there was another way to live outside of the confines of communism and war. When my grandfather immigrated to America, he became a pastor with the Salvation Army, and he was the first Chinese-speaking pastor at the Chinatown Church here in San Francisco. And so with him being the first Chinese-speaking pastor in a community that's all Chinese immigrants, he was able to really grow that church and grow that ministry beyond what former pastors were able to do. And so amazing. With that, he had a lot of influence, not only in the community, but also in the denomination for that work. Now, because it was a Chinese-speaking congregation, the denomination didn't really know what to do with him, so they just kind of let him be, which was great, because then he can kind of have freedom to do whatever he wanted to do. And I think that was also, I mean, this word that you said, this resistance, that I think when you say it initially, I'm like, oh, culturally, we're not a non-resistant people. But I think in my lineage, we are. And I'm also an Enneagram 8, so I'm just like by nature resistant. So it's interesting, like when I observe my family pattern, you know, my mom resisting medicine to go into the arts and my grandfather resisting, back then what was typical was to go into business, right? Resisting business, well, actually, his business failed, so he had no choice. Okay. A failed business to go into ministry. Like, yeah. you know, for him to do that, I think was a big stance that he made in terms of how he wanted to pursue his faith and resisting also the dominant white denomination to carve out a safe haven for his people in the way that was necessary for that immigrant community.
Wow.
So his example I have carried with me and have observed all my life in terms of him not just being like a spiritual authority and figure in the community, but also creating social programs and benefits for that the community needed specifically. And another thing that he did, which I really admire, is he actually went back to China after being blacklisted. He went back after many years to serve people in the Hill tribes. So even choosing to go back to a place that you've been blacklisted, choosing to go into ministry when you are surrounded with, you know, wealth and prosperity in America, and choosing to serve what was necessary for your people in a sea of a white denomination, I think are ways that I saw him live out his faith in ways that I've carried on in my own faith as well. I think in the church that I grew up with it being Asian American, I will say, you know, that sense of comfort was probably one of the higher like goals and desires. We were very insular, and I think we were coming from, you know, the safe haven that my grandfather created for the immigrant community, but then the next generation kept that safe haven when maybe it wasn't as necessary in that time and place. And so with that lack of diversity in engaging in other culture or even digging into our own historical context, I will say, did not know myself in the context of what it meant to be Christian and Asian American and what that meant in terms of my place in the world. I do think, though, that sense of comfort and safety provided a really maybe strong foundation for what community could look like and camaraderie could look like among your own. But as I grew and I left this church and went to university and started traveling in different parts of the world, I think that's where I began to then see a more global perspective of what the church is and should look like, as opposed to just being confined to the comforts of folks that look like you and act like you and speak like you.
Growing up in the church, what mental image did you have of Jesus, if any, when you pictured Jesus, when people spoke and talked about Jesus, how did you imagine God?
Yeah, I think just like a fair-skinned Middle Eastern man based on the, you know, 80s TV shows and like movies.
So good.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Hope you'll join us next week for part two of this interview. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more content, you can go to jwbuck.org or follow me on Instagram. Handles JW Buck. If you have any questions about culture, cultural identity, or faith, feel free to send me a message. Hope you'll join us next week.